For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk this morning about a story about Dongshan, the founder of the Zhaodong or Shoto line in China in the 9th century. Dongshan wrote the Song of the Precious Merit Samadhi, which we'll be chanting at midday service. This is a story about when Dongshan was traveling around after he left his teacher. He was traveling around with Shenshan Sengmi, sometimes referred to as Uncle Mi. And I'm not sure from the sources whether he was Dongshan's Dharma uncle, in other words, a Dharma brother of Dongshan's teacher Yunyan, or whether he was a student of Yunyan and like Dongshan, and so Dongshan's students referred to him as Uncle Mi. Anyway, there are about 8 stories in the recorded sayings of Dongshan of them traveling together, visiting different teachers, which is something that back in China they used to do. After training with one teacher, they would travel around and check out other teachers or check themselves out with other teachers. And it seems to be happening in America as well. We have many students here who've practiced other places, and that's great. And we have students here who've just started practicing here as well, so that's also great. But anyway, this is a story about a white rabbit. So this is, in addition to it being in Dongshan's recorded sayings, this is case 56 in the Book of Serenity. And I'll just tell you the story briefly. As Dongshan and his spiritual Uncle Mi were walking along, they saw a white rabbit run by in front of them. Sengmi said, "Swift," or it could also be translated as eminent, or how in the recorded sayings translates it as elegant. So they saw this white rabbit running by, and Sengmi said, "Elegant, or eminent." And Dongshan said, "How? How so?" And Sengmi said, "It's like a commoner being made a prime minister." And Dongshan scolded him, as he does in a few of the stories. He said, "Such a venerable old person, and you still say such words?" And Sengmi said, "Well, what about you?" And Dongshan said, "Generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty." So that's the story, and I want to talk about it and what it's about in terms of our practice. So, again, there's this white rabbit who runs by. And in the commentary to the case that Hongzhe picked, Wangsang, who put together the Book of Serenity, says, "In the teachings there are 2 gates, natural and cultivated. In Dongshan's lineage, this is called using the accomplishment to illustrate the state." Then he goes on, "Usually we awaken by means of cultivation, entering sagehood from ordinariness. A commoner is directly appointed prime minister. But if you're first enlightened and then cultivate afterwards, you enter ordinariness from sagehood. Traditional nobility is originally honorable from the beginning. Through drifting, destitute, and myriad conditions, the basic constitution is still there. That's why it's said," and there's a couple references to the Lotus Sutra, "in the metaphor of the destitute son is illustrated the path. And the verse on presenting the jewel is shown the net of salvation." So, the issue here is, you know, is this rabbit swift and elegant like a commoner becoming prime minister, or is it generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty? That's what Dongshan says. And I think that's the style of our practice. And again, this refers to a couple of stories which I'm going to talk about from the Lotus Sutra. And actually, Gene Reeves, who's the translator of the Lotus Sutra, there are several translations, but his is the newest and really excellent. And he's been here before. He's going to be here 2 weeks from tomorrow evening to speak about a section of the Lotus Sutra. These two stories, the first is the story, it's referred to as the story of the prodigal son. And this is directly a story about, as Dongshan says, generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty. So these stories are about Buddhahood and our practice, and what is our practice about. So let me tell you the story, and it's a little long, I'll just sum it up, but the story is told actually by four of Shakyamuni Buddha's most great 10 disciples, all very accomplished: Subhuti, Mahakashapa, Mahakachakana, and Moggallana. They were all arhats. They had purified themselves completely. So this is also, this case of Dongshan's and the stories are about bodhisattva practice as opposed to arhat practice. Arhat practice is totally purifying oneself. This is, maybe this is the case of a commoner directly appointed prime minister, awakened by means of cultivation. And to some extent, our practice includes both. But here are four disciples of the Buddha, arhats, personally purified, personally enlightened. And they hear in the Lotus Sutra that even such arhats can enter into bodhisattvahood and get over some personal nirvana and enter into the world and onto the path of total Buddhahood, which means not just practicing for yourself, not just purifying yourself, but actually universal liberation, practicing together. So that's what this case, this story is about. And the story of the prodigal son, maybe some of you have heard it. How many have not heard the story of the prodigal son in the Lotus Sutra? Okay, good. There's a couple, so I can tell the story. So they say that they give a parable, and they address the Buddha, and they say, suppose a young man leaves his father, runs away, and lives in some other land for a long time, 10, 20, even 50 years. The older he became, the poorer and more needy he became. He wandered around in every direction, looking for clothing and food, until finally, by chance, he was heading towards his homeland. Meanwhile, the father had searched for the son unsuccessfully and now lived in another city, and he had this very wealthy, he had become wealthy and had a very wealthy household, and it describes all the gold and treasures and all the servants and, you know, the great land that he owned. Meanwhile, the poor son, wandering through village after village, passing through various lands and cities, happened to come to the city where his father was living. And the father had always thought about this son who had gone a long time, but he never spoken to anyone about it, just keeping it to himself. And he thought to himself, old and worn out, I have great wealth, gold, silver, and so forth, yet I have no son. Someday my end will come and my wealth will be scattered and lost, for there's no one whom I can leave it to. So he thought of his son, and at some point the son actually wandered by and accidentally arrived at his father's house. And at the gate, he looked and saw his father from a distance, and his father was very magnificent and, you know, had many servants and a string of pearls, and, you know, so the it was and was had many people who were impressed with him, and the son, seeing this very powerful person, was full of fear and wished he hadn't come to this place and thought this must be some king, and if I'm here long, I may be captured and forced to work, and he just, you know, he was terrified of this person who was actually his father. Meanwhile, the elderly gentleman on the lion's seat recognized his son at first sight and was filled with joy and said, thought to himself, at last I have the one to whom my stores of wealth are to be entrusted. And he sent his messenger to go after the son and bring him back. And they grabbed him, and the son was surprised and afraid and screamed and was in anger. Anyway, he was terrified. Thought he'd be put to death for, you know, going anywhere near such richness. And the father, seeing this and understanding, told his assistants, no need to do that, don't force him to come. And he decided to use skillful means. He told them to release the son, and then he had the father secretly sent two men of miserable and undignified appearance. So these were, you know, great courtiers disguised, and told them to go there and visit and gently tell the poor man that there's a place for him to work where he will be given double the normal wage. If he agrees, bring him back here and put him to work. If he asks what kind of work you want him to do, tell him that we are hiring him to remove dung and that you will work along with him. So they went and they brought the son back, and the son was, you know, felt it was an appropriate job for him, so he was, then the father put on coarse, torn, and dirty clothes, smeared his body with dirt, and also went to work with him and said to the workers, all of them, get to work, don't be lazy, and so forth. And he gradually, after a long time, son became comfortable in this situation, and the father had said, I'll increase your wages, and made him comfortable there, but still he was doing his work. And he continued that for a long time. At some point, the old man became ill. Knowing he would die soon, he said to the poor son, I now have abundant gold, silver, and rare treasures filling my storehouses to overflowing. I want you to have a detailed understanding of the quantities involved and of what should be received and paid out. And so he had him become manager of the estate. And anyway, the story goes on, and I'm giving you the summary, short version. After some time, the father saw that the son was becoming more confident and accomplished, and that he, you know, had gone beyond his sense of inferiority. And at some point, when his end was near, the father ordered the son to arrange a meeting with the relatives, king, ministers, nobles, and so forth. When they'd all come together, he announced, gentlemen, I should tell you that this is my son, my natural born son. In another city, he left me and ran away for a long time, enduring loneliness and suffering. His original name was such and such, as my name is so and so. I worried about him a long time and looked all over for him, and then he suddenly appeared and we met again, and now my wealth belongs entirely to him. All my earlier disbursements and receipts are known by this son. So the son, thinking he gained something he never had before, was filled with joy. In conclusion, they say, the very rich old man is the Buddha, and we are all like the Buddha's children. The Buddha has always taught that we are his children. Because of the three kinds of suffering, in the midst of birth and death, we have borne all kinds of passionate worries. Being confused and ignorant, we enjoy attachment to lesser teachings. Today, the Buddha has led us to ponder over and to rid ourselves of such teachings and all the dung of diverting discussions. In the past, we were diligent and made progress in the way until we reached nirvana, the arhat nirvana, and our hearts were filled with great joy. We were content. We said to ourselves, due to our diligent perseverance in the Buddha Dharma, we have received many rewards. But the Buddha, knowing that we were attached to low desires, to a lower teaching, says here, and delighted in lesser teachings, let us go our own way, and did not tell us. You will have yet have the insight of a Buddha, your portion of the treasury. So he goes on talking about this, but the point is that the Son was the Son from the very beginning. And this this saying of Dongshan's about the white rabbit, generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty, is the situation of our practice. So people come to practice and they feel like it's very difficult, or they read about the teaching and they feel puzzled and they don't feel like it. You know, often people feel like they can't do that and they can't be like Buddha. But actually our practice is to realize something that's been here from the very beginning, that is already available to you and deeply part of what you are. There are many forms of Buddhism where there are, you know, stages of, you know, of progress where you, you know, get various merit badges along the way and, you know, eventually get to some higher state. And, you know, that's fine. If that's what you want to do, you can do that for a while. But what this story is about, and what the story about Dongshan and the story from the Lotus Sutra is about, is this inalienable, inherent quality of awakeness and kindness, this Buddha nature. That is not something you have to, you know, figure out and strive at and accomplish in you. So there's a second story in the Lotus Sutra about this also that is referred to in the commentary to the story about Dongshan. This is a story about a jewel. The story's shorter, so maybe I'll just read the whole thing. And this is also told by this parable in the Lotus Sutra. Some of the parables are told by the Buddha. This one is also told by 500 arhats who have just received assurance that not just the great disciples of Buddha, but all of the personally awakened ones will eventually become Buddha, will enter the Bodhisattva path, will go beyond practicing for just for themselves. And this isn't to disparage the arhat path, it is a venerable path, but the Lotus Sutra is talking about how Buddha is here for everyone. So they understand this, and eventually the Lotus Sutra says anybody who hears even a line from the Lotus Sutra will eventually be a Buddha. So now you've heard a line from the Lotus Sutra. So this Buddha-ness is not something that, you know, you have to, what is it, Mary Oliver says, crawl on your knees through the desert for 40 years or something. I mean, people do things like that, but anyway. In this story, the arhats say to the Buddha, it is as if some man went to a good friend's house, got drunk on wine, and fell asleep. Meanwhile, his friend, having to go away on business, took a priceless jewel, sewed it into the lining of the man's robe as a gift, and left. The man, being drunk and asleep, knew nothing of this. After getting up, he went on his way until he reached some other land. There he had to use much energy and effort finding food and clothing, undergoing exceedingly great hardship, and making do with whatever he could find. Later, his friend happened to meet him and said, "How sad, old friend. Why do you have to do this for the sake of food and clothing? Wanting you to be in comfort and able to satisfy the five desires, a long time ago, in such and such a year, month and day, I sewed a priceless jewel into the lining of your robe. It should still be there. In your ignorance, you are slaving and worrying to keep yourself alive. How dumb. Go and exchange that jewel for whatever you need. Then you can be free to have whatever you wish and be free from all poverty and want." And then it explains, the Buddha is like this friend. When he was a bodhisattva, he taught us to seek comprehensive wisdom, but we soon forgot. neither knowing nor perceiving. Having obtained the way of the Arhat, we supposed we had reached the way of extinction, to extinction, to nirvana. Originally, nirvana was thought of as extinction, getting free of life and suffering, which meant getting free of birth and death, getting free of being in the world, entering some other higher realm. That's the ideal for the Arhat. But finally, they go on, finding it hard to make a living, we've contented ourselves with whatever we could find, yet our aspiration for comprehensive wisdom was never lost. So, and now the Buddha tells us that actually we are really bodhisattvas, assured of attaining supreme awakening. So the jewel is already there. Somewhere on your cushion or chair right now. This great jewel. So this has implications for our practice. What is it you're doing in Zazen? Some of us are sitting here all day. Are you trying to figure something out? Are you trying to get to some special experience? Are you trying to reach some higher state of mind or higher state of being? Well, you know, that's all those things are possible activities of people engaged in spiritual practice, and even some forms of Buddhism seem to encourage that. But we're practicing the school of Dongshan in China in the 9th century and Dogen in the 13th century, and our practice is still, we make effort. It's not, you know, it's not easy to manage to show up, to sit all day, or to come to a Dharma talk. There's some effort involved. And, you know, we have to, sitting facing the wall, being upright and relaxed, being present, we also have to face boredom sometimes. Impatience, when's the bell going to ring? Sadness and grief in all the situations of our life and all the confusion or anxieties in our own lives and all of the problems in the world that threaten our world. So it's not that it's easy, and yet it's not about reaching some special state of being. It's not about getting high. It's not about entering into some special space where we are closer to Buddha. You already have the jewel. All of you already are children of Buddha. Just because you're here, you know that. And, you know, maybe all of us at some point have to go through shoveling dung, dealing with all the crap in our lives and in the world. It's part of our practice, maybe, to face all of the karma conditioning that obstructs us from seeing that, oh yeah, Buddha. Buddha's here. But I'm interested in this white rabbit. I don't know, I'm going to try and check if there's some Chinese cultural Tang Dynasty or some dynasty connotation to white rabbits. If anybody knows, let me know. But I'm kind of researching this. But, you know, we have associations to white rabbits, too. There was one who was late for a very important date. And befriended a little girl named Alice. So, you know, when we're busy shoveling dung, we may feel like we're late. You know, we're too late to get to be Buddha. It's too late. And we have to rush around and feel like it's very important. We worry about the time. The other thing about that white rabbit, though, is that anyway, down into a hole. He dived down into the hole. And Alice followed him. Just like Sungmi and Dongshan were, you know, led by the rabbit to this discussion. And down, and after diving down into the hole, what was there? Well, Lewis Carroll called it Wonderland. And, you know, just because you've heard now that you're already children of Buddha and that you have this jewel of Buddhahood already somewhere, you know, around you, sewed into your robes or whatever. That doesn't mean that we don't also, in the course of sitting for a day or practicing regularly, encounter some sense of wonder, something mysterious, some wonderland. But, you know, in Alice's story, it's not that, you know, she reached wonderland by working hard and accomplishing, you know, various things. She dived down into this hole. So as you settle on your seats during the course of the day or through your regular practice, can you sink down into this wonderland of this jewel of Buddhahood that already you are children of Buddha? So, you know, it's not, again, this is kind of subtle. It's not that practice isn't work in some sense. But it's not the usual kind of work that, you know, our culture and our, maybe our human consciousness, or certainly our human consciousness in this world of industrial growth, and we have to get more and more, and, you know, that success is about growing and progressing and all of that, rather than just enjoying gratefully what is here. We think we have to, you know, climb up various stages of accomplishment to get some degree or something that will then allow us to enter Wonderland. No, Alice just fell down a hole. And maybe there's some kind of work that's involved in letting go enough so that you can be sitting on your cushion, facing the wall, facing yourself, facing your boredom and your sadness, and just fall down that hole into Wonderland. Can you settle into this deeper reality of already being children of Buddha? Already, all of you will become formally Buddhas, or just, you know, you are partaking of Buddha. How do you express that in your life? So this is, you know, the work of precepts, but how do we appreciate and wonder at this reality? So it's the work of letting go. It's the work of relaxing. It's the work of still paying attention as you relax, upright but relaxed. And in the context of this white rabbit, of course, some of you are too young, but in my generation there was a song about a white rabbit, and I still can hear Gracie Slick singing, one pill makes you larger and one pill makes you small, and the one that mother gives you won't do anything at all. So, you know, some periods of Zazen you may feel inflated and larger, and some periods of Zazen you may feel small, and you may realize humbly how much greed and anger and confusion is sitting there on the cushion with you. But the one that Buddha gives you won't do anything at all. So this pill of Zazen, this medicine of Zazen that Buddha gives you, is not about getting you higher or getting you down. It's about, okay, here you are. You are here on your cushion, on your Buddhisi. And I confess, you know, coming from that period, that, you know, I think I probably first came to Zen. When I first came to Zen, I was sort of a sesshin junkie. You know, I thought I had to sit as many sesshins as I could and get, you know, wanted to get high, you know, in some other way than I had before. But really, this is just about actually, you know, as Dogen says, studying the self. And, you know, that's a kind of work, but it's not about becoming some, you know, more eminent, elegant, swifter person than you are already. Can you settle into this space where this sense of wonder can be available? Just as you are, just meeting yourself. So at the end of her song, Gracie Slick sings, "Remember what the Dormouse said, feed your head." Well, maybe in art context, it means feed your whole being. Body and mind not separate, but study the self is feeding your head. Be willing to be present in the midst of confusion or boredom or sadness or grasping or, you know, get to know all that stuff. Become friendly with yourself. You are all children of Buddha. How do we appreciate this wonderland that's already here? I really appreciate it. The wonder of being alive, the wonder of finding a practice which can help you just be yourself. The wonder of all these funny teachings and stories and so forth that, you know, encourage us, can encourage you. And, you know, if this story doesn't appeal to you, fine, there's others. So again, Dongshan and Sungmi were traveling around, and a white rabbit ran in front of them. And Sungmi said, "How swift!" And Dongshan said, "What do you mean?" And Sungmi said, "Like a commoner becoming prime minister." And Dongshan said, "Such a venerable old person like you still says such things?" And Sungmi said, "What about you?" And Dongshan said, "Generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty." So, you know, when we fall into poverty, we need to acknowledge that. Poor me. And because we're human beings, we all have problems, one kind or another. And yet, this wonderland is available, sewn into your clothes. So for people who are sitting for the day, we'll have tea and discussion later on, but also some folks are joining us for the Dharma talk. So we have a few minutes if any of you have questions, comments, or responses, please feel free. Kazan.
I just wanted to speak to the hair image. I immediately thought of, I think it's true of Japan and maybe China as well, that they don't see a man and they see a white rat. That lunar image is so important in our tradition and everything it indicates. Because we have the tarot and the moon is, you know, the south and wonderland. It's the world of putting down the rational and allowing the flowering of the rest.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so the rabbit and the moon. If you look at the moon when it's full or close to full, you may see a person or you may see a rabbit. That's what they see in Asia. So thank you. Yeah, that's relevant to this. Anything else about this white rabbit? Or anything else in the story? Alex?
I was curious, is the reading of that story of the rabbit, is there reality to be found in both of those opinions, or are we led to believe that Dokushan's opinion is the one that matters?
Well, you know, in the commentary it mentions that these are two approaches to practice. And yes, the people who practice trying to purify themselves, the arhats, are very deeply respected in our tradition. And, you know, it's very individual. For some of you, at different times of your practice, that kind of shoveling shit kind of practice, you know, has to happen, maybe. But the point is to remember, not just what the Dormouse said, but to remember that from the beginning, you're already children of Buddha. So when we start from there, which is more the style of Soto practice, so you start from the top of the mountain, and that we are all children of Buddha. This jewel is here with us already. And yet, we do have this affliction of ignorance going way back, this karmic consciousness, where we have stored up, you know, various patterns, each of us in our own way, various patterns of greed or of anger or an aversion or of confusion. And so we need to work with that. And how do we work with that? There are very, various different ways. Sometimes we need to focus very intensely working through things, or just sitting with it. How do we see, how do we study the self? How do we sit with that stuff and become friendly with it and forgive ourselves for being human beings? So we do need to do that practice too. But I think, you know, part of the point of this story is Dongshan emphasizes after falling into poverty, how does he say it? Generations of nobility temporarily fallen into poverty. So underneath all of the confusion and grasping, there is this these generations of nobility, these ancestors of wonder and awakening. So in some ways, both. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this really adds anything, but you know, thinking of those two styles, and just for the sake of fullness, and it seems like, or completeness, I mean, there's also, I mean, the Zen literature is full of stories of people who shovel dung, so to speak, in very elegant ways, and they have the full of stories about people who are very eminent and elegant, but in an elegant kind of shitty way, and it seems like those are
That's
aspects
right.
that we traverse through as well.
Yeah, so we need to play with the stuff of our life. And you know, I can't tell you how to be Buddha. Each one of us has our own way of expressing this jewel on our seat, in our posture, in our activity. And, you know, I think the different styles are great. The different styles are there to be inspired. You know, some people may be inspired by this guy shoveling dung for all those years. Some people may be inspired by seeing this glorious Buddha sitting up on the porch with all this, you know, all of this fancy jewels and stuff, and everything in between. And from when we kind of first recognize the jewel, then, you know, okay, how do you want to play with that? How do you want to turn the jewel? In many, many ways, in many different ways. Eric.
I think this is based on what Sarah just said. One of my favorite short stories is by Guy Maupassant, The Necklace. And long story short, you've got this middle-class French family. They're invited to this fancy ball, and the friends with a wealthy family borrow a gorgeous diamond necklace. The woman loses it, so they buy another one that looks exactly like it, and they're in bad shape. 20 years later, she sees her friend, and her friend's like, wow, you're in bad shape, what's up? So she tells the story about how they've been working like all day long for 20 years to replace the necklace. Oh. And then the rich woman says, wow, that was custom jewelry. it's kind of the flip of the diamond in the road.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it is. So sometimes we all work at something that really, you know, doesn't need so much work. The art of Zazen, the art of practice, in many ways is letting go of all the things we need, we think we need to accomplish. Matt?
Kind of going back to the dung shoveling. I think in many parts of the world, people use dung, they dry it out, and then they use it to light their fires and to cook their food. So in a way, you're shoveling dung, but it also helps nourish you and helps keep you warm if you let it sit there for a while.
Yeah, thank you, nourishing. Yes. And also, of course, it gets used on, to help fertilize the crops, to help food grow better. So, yeah. So it's not pointless all those years that he was doing that. So that's an important point.